hppodcraft.com.
You told me yesterday that you pulled stuff for the comments, Joe, and said, it's not a lot because we just covered the Nutcracker all month. And to myself, I went, oh, yeah. Even though it was just like a couple of weeks ago. And I don't think it's because of our typical complaints about being addled. It's because it was such a hallucinatory trip. It's hard to remember all the details or that it even happened. Mm-hmm. It's like these comments are the only evidence that we ever took that journey so long ago last month.
That's right. This is the comment show for January 2022, and we're talking about the distant past of December 2021, and it's all nutcracking joy.
I'm Chad Pfeiffer. He's Chris Lackey. If you don't know what show you're listening to, you're in a similar shape that we are. It's Strange Studies of Strange Stories.
And we're a Patreon, and we're going to start with comments from Pfeiffer's Nutcracker music that he did. First of all, John Hazard writes, brilliant. I hate Christmas, but I love this. Why? My logic circuits are melting.
Yes. And ferreting out the robots one at a time.
Devin Morse writes, The Nutcracker and the Deadmau5 King by E.D.M. Hoffman is just what I needed this holiday season. Seriously, good. Though, this rules. It reminded me of how the classic Lemmings video game interpreted Dance of the Reed Flutes.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what he's talking about. Longer Tram Cars writes, thank you. I'm a former ballerina. My partner almost exclusively listens to 8-bit video game tunes, and we both hate the usual holiday music. This arrangement was made for our Yuletide house. All right. Robert D. writes, love this. Fascinating how I recognize almost all of these melodies, even though I've never seen the ballet. They really are so widespread in culture. I'm looking forward to hearing the origin story during the next couple of weeks. It's crazy how much of that music gets used. And after producing a bunch of it, my ears were even more perked up to it. Any movie with a Christmas setting that's made, that's a modern movie, is gonna bust into some drum machine riddled hip hop version or metalized version of one of these. It just happens so much. It was happening in Hawkeye.
It's all public domain. So it's cheap. So but people cheap know it. So it's perfect. Mike Nussbaum writes, Chad, I have to admit that I usually enjoy your music. However, this Nutcracker sweet music made me feel like I was going insane while listening to it. Job done. You almost got me into your death cult. Good yes. try. I'm glad I still get to continue living, though.
Nussbaum! Can get him into my death cult. That's so funny. Well, it's disposable, and that means you could dispose of it while it's still in the package. No problem.
Yeah. And that gets us into Nutcracker Part 1.
Forrest Rush writes, regarding the part where Drosselmeyer gets irked because the kids are bored, and I think you said calls them dumb, the book I have it as, for understanding a kinder ist solch kunstliches Werk nicht, ich will nur mein Schloss wieder einpacken. If this is the right part, understandige is the word in question. I would normally translate it as unreasonable, but in this case, unwise or not clever would be more appropriate. Mm. One thesaurus I checked included unsagacious, which really defeats the purpose of sounding pissed off with a bunch of kids. So nothing as funny as what you may have thought up, like Dummkopf, Dummerchen, Trottel, or Idioten. Love hearing you guys tell this tale, and the music's great. Okay, so really, it was the British translator who was calling those kids stupid. Because unreasonable might be exactly what he was saying. That might be something you'd fly out with. Like, your kids are nuts. This thing is beautiful, and if they don't appreciate it, I'm going to take it back. Yeah. I would translate that sentence as. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's the mean Mrs. St. Simon who...
I do enjoy it more when people are just being cruel to children.
Well, so I definitely enjoy it more if Drosselmeyer is really petty. I think it's funny about his character. So.
Me too. Michelle Albert writes, firstly, please convince Andrew to do a full reading of this. I would pay money for that. I'll send him a note. Secondly, OMG, that you guys are doing this is legitimately great. I got a copy of the book and a Nutcracker for Christmas when I was about 7, after seeing the ballet for maybe the second or third time in as many years. I tell you what, that handsomely dressed gentleman stood on my dresser until somebody who shall remain nameless donated him to the Goodwill when my parents moved out of the house I grew up in. I knew I should have taken it with me to adorn my university dorm room desk.
Well, at least you're over it. My parents threw out some of my stuff once, and I'm still mad about it, so I totally understand. By the way, Michelle accidentally revealed something in that comment. She goes, oh my God, that you guys are doing this is legitimately great, which kind of implies that the other shows are quote-unquote great, you know?
Well, Ben Moule writes, an interesting program on Radio 3 this evening. They certainly agree with you about Drosselmeyer and the Dark Undercurrents. And he provides a link.
Yeah, it's the listening service is the show. The title of the show was The Nutcracker, Strange Enchantments. So go check it out. The comments are like supplemental show notes. There's always links to more interesting stuff that's related.
Michelle Albert writes, in other news, on the subject of children's books with super sweet adaptations but truly dark source material, you may want to take a peek at Mary Poppins. So dark, so weird.
That's interesting.
I've never read Mary Poppins, the original book, but that movie is messed up. There's a lot of crazy things that happen in there. I love it.
Maybe we'll look at it at some point. I didn't know it was dark and weird and all that business. No, although I guess I should know that. I mean, she flies around in an umbrella with an umbrella. In my head, she always flies up into a jet engine and explodes, but I know that's The Simpsons. On episode 2 of The Nutcracker, we've got Hermagoras writing, regarding Kira Sedgwick's shark teeth. I'm not saying Kira Sedgwick is a deep one, but I am saying the Sedgwicks, including Kira and the famous 60s model Edie, are a very old New England family, like the Cabots and the Lodges and the Lowells, and that the Sedgwick Family Cemetery in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, has graves arranged in concentric circles around the patriarch at the center. Whoa. The legend is that this is so that at the second coming, all the Sedgwicks will rise, facing their first American ancestor. But there may be something more loathsome and eldritch to it. Kira Sedgwick is married, as we all know, to Kevin Bacon, and I can't help but wonder if the Kevin Bacon game, with its goal of linking us all together in a grand web, may be less innocent than first appears. Oh,
wow.
That's some pretty disturbing stuff.
Yeah.
Hermagoras. You know, that's funny because we were talking about Kira Sedgwick's teeth when Jamie Britton was on the show, and he actually wrote me an email asking me to stop talking about it.
Did he?
He wrote me, it said,
"Yeah,
I have it up here. It said, Chad, I'm really scared after what we talked about with Kira Sedgwick. It hurts because I'm so scared. Let's cut it out together."
Wow. Yeah, really upset him.
But a really juvenile email, too, considering, you know, he's a pretty well-regarded writer, so you would think.
Yeah, well, I mean, that sounds like him to me. That's how he talks, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. I just want to step in here. I love Kira Sedgwick. She was on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Wunch. Do you remember that character? Mm-hmm. Raymond Holt's nemesis?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my God. She's awesome.
She's great. She's a wonderful actress. There's an edge of creep to her, and it's not her fault. I still love her. Well, in fact, I love her more for it.
It's her lineage.
Joe Beck writes, Chad and Chris were uncertain about what the mice were firing back in the face of the toys' candy barrage. The St. Simon translation has, Fred's hussars were battered by the enemy's artillery with odious offensive balls, which made dreadful spots on their red jackets. Maybe it comes of having dealt with mice infestations, but all I can think of was mouse poops. I would be very happy to be convinced otherwise. I'm sorry. I think you're absolutely right. I think it is mouse poops.
Yeah, I think you're right, too. Although I'm just giggling so hard at odious offensive balls that it's hard for me to get past it. But I think you're right. I think that's definitely what's going on. Stuart Huntsman writes, my pet theory is that this being the 19th century, the doctor just gave Maria a bunch of laudanum and possibly also some cocaine to deal with the ghosts in her blood. And this is the inevitable result. That's very possible.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Eric Gordon writes, at the same moment, I said out loud, what were they riding? The mice.
Yeah.
Cavalry.
Great minds think alike.
And Alex Liggett wrote, I'm really enjoying this story, having saved all 4 episodes up to binge over the Christmas holiday. Just one tiny piece of pedantry, Chris. Calvary is where Jesus was crucified. Cavalry is soldiers on horseback. I hope you both had a great Christmas, and thanks for all the entertainment and enlightenment that you brought us this year. Well, I did say it wrong. What? I think I corrected myself on the show.
You said it wrong, and then you said it right, so I just left it in. Thinking, surely Alex isn't going to weigh in on this. That's what I was thinking at the time in the edit. But boy, typical Alex.
He sees a weakness and he just has to pounce.
Oh, yeah. Vampiric. I mean, I appreciate it. You know, it's sort of like when a rival bests you, but you kind of give that nod, like you appreciate being bested. That's what just happened.
I do appreciate that. You know, I sort of wonder if that is a regional thing. Like my mom growing up, she always said warsh instead of wash. Mm-hmm. And I think I said cavalry a lot when I was talking about horses because we watched Westerns and things when I was a kid growing up. So I think I have a bit of a regional dialect or accent or something like that. So that might be a holdover of that, or I might have just been saying it wrong.
Well, it's definitely regional to blame your mistakes on your mom. That is something that... I'm just kidding. Paleco writes, Lehman really does nail what it feels like to listen to a crazy person on public transportation. Right? I actually don't know exactly what that means, but I think we just found the pull quote for your autobiography, Andrew.
Oh, man.
Dion Lay writes, I finally caught up after listening to the podcast from episode 1 year ago, then subscribing to Patreon and starting all over again at the beginning of lockdown. This episode marked me being totally up to date. Told myself I would finally post a comment once I got here. Well, welcome, Dion. Thank you so much for doing that. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for making these last few years a lot better. I think this means I've listened to all the first stage of the show at least 3 times now. Also, Cross Jefferson made me howl.
Me too.
That's good stuff.
That gets us into part 3. Drix writes, great episode, guys. I have weird insight into Queen Mossering's death rattle of... Is it QQ or... What do we say?
You were saying QQ when you read it on the show, but it's spelled Q-U-E, like K is what I was thinking.
K-K-K. Drix goes on to say, so to preface this, I used to play a lot of World of Warcraft in years gone by. One of the pieces of gamerspeak I picked up was a phrase QQ. That's the capital Q and the capital Q. Mm-hmm. Somebody is QQing when they are complaining or whinging on about something that's usually not very justified. So when Lady Mossering spat out QQ as part of her death gasps, I was right back there watching people complain on the forums or in game chat. Niche, but hopefully somewhat relevant.
Well, if you have a theory that there's some time traveling happening with ETA Hoffman, I think that it is relevant.
Yeah.
It's more likely what Alan Ricks says here. I'm of the mind that since QUEK means what or that in many Romance languages, Spanish, Portuguese, French, she was saying what to put an emphasis on each of her lines. So I think it might have been that.
Yeah, makes a lot more sense.
What?
Nathan Adam wrote, punched in the Gwen Stacy. I laughed way too loud at that, Chris. Well, yeah, I can't take too much credit for that one because there's a friend of mine was talking about there was a superhero role-playing game, and I can't remember which one it was, where somebody said that the weaknesses of good superheroes are that they have people they care about and that you can actually, instead of punching him in the face, you can punch him in the girlfriend. But, you know, I just got more specific because that's exactly what was going on there.
Well, it was really funny and made me laugh too.
Peter Larson writes, I wonder if the 7 heads are supposed to recall the 7-headed dragon from Revelations. It seems kind of a stretch, but why not 5 or 9 heads?
I think you're right. I mean, 7 is numerologically important, right? For some reason.
It's a lucky number. 7. Yeah.
7th son of a 7th son. Rafe Ball writes, on the following morning, the astronomer was in raptures. He fell upon the mechanist's neck and cried, it is he, we have him, he is found. But there are 2 things, worthy colleague, which we must see to. In the first place, we must braid for your excellent nephew a stout mechanical apparatus, which shall be joined in such a way to his lower jaw that it can move it with great force. In the next place, we shall remove his right arm and replace it with a laser cannon.
What?
Skeletor. And that was how Trapjaw came to be.
That was a good Skeletor.
Thank you. I always did feel like Trapjaw looks kind of shocked by his own condition. Like his eyes, he's got a lot of pain in his eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Go look at that figure online. He's like, what happened to me?
He's not happy.
Jim Cannon writes, I'm certainly glad you guys are still doing this ridiculous show. It is one of my favorite things in the world. So in that Nutcracker in the Four Realms movie starring Richard E. Grant, there's a scene where the main character sits down to watch Misty Copeland dance, which is a nice nod to the ballet, as Chad describes. I started watching a little of that and wasn't too into it. And I don't remember if I mentioned that on the show or not.
Yeah,
but I might have been running
did,
it down or it came off that way. I didn't mean
it
to.
It might have got cut.
It was just not a particular interest to me, but I think it jumps off from the book quite a bit. Mm. Nevertheless, some of our listeners wrote in and said they really enjoyed it, so might be something to check out.
Check it out. Now that gets us into part 4. Matthew Alderman writes, the bit with confiseur, pastry cook, and it's in the translation I read, is one of the oddest and most existential turns in the story. As to the sacrifices, it's rendered as the festival of the interrupted sacrifice in the version I read.
Whoa.
It seems to be an in-joke about an opera. Let me find the link. So then he quotes this here. Here and there, Hoffman allows himself a little in-joke, a literary or musical reference that might well have been above the head of the child reader, even in his own time. Marie's sugar figurines include a tenant farmer, who I have translated as Farmer Caraway, who is a character in a play by the dramatist August von Kotzebue, Hoffman's contemporary. And the Maid of Orleans is from Friedrich Schiller's well-known play about Joan of Arc. Schiller's name lives on, unlike that of Peter von Winter, a member of the famous Mannheim Orchestra of the time, and a composer of the opera with a title that translates into English as The Interrupted Sacrifice. Hoffman refers to it when Marie and the Nutcracker, now revealed to be young Drosselmeyer, visiting the land of toys, witness a chaotic traffic jam in the capital city.
Gotcha. Well, that is much less interesting than the candy version of the Wicker Man that I had going on in my head.
Yeah.
Interrupted Sacrifice. Wow.
A little disappointed.
I'm disappointed in you that you didn't catch those references. I know that that's the era pop culture you know a lot about. Professor Koschka writes, "Loved the coverage of this whole story. I'm sorry to say I agree with Lackey's interpretation of Maria's fate. It made me think of the movie Pan's Labyrinth. No matter how much I want to think of all the wonderful fantasies being real, I just can't help but read it as the dying hallucinations of someone who has lived a short and painful life."
Aww.
That probably says something about me, doesn't it?
Commodores Sean McGiven and Zane Grave also pointed out Pan's Labyrinth. Jim Cannon says, "I can't bring myself to agree with Chris's interpretation. I think it's a bit too much of a stretch and an unnecessarily dark conclusion to a story that's completely glossed over this climactic battle between the Nutcracker and the Seven-Headed Mouse King. It's a fairy tale, and it gets a fairy tale ending with a wedding and a happily ever after, however unearned and silly."
There you go. Yeah, I'm of that opinion as well. I want it to be cheery, so that's what I think it is. Michelle Elbert writes, "So I seem to recall that the bit that happens later, when Maria dreamily says that she would still love the Nutcracker, happens like 10 years later, and the nephew is also in his late teens, early 20s. Or at least that's how the illustrations in my book showed them. I admit, it could be some revisionism on the part of the illustrator, but I'm reasonably sure the final bit happened some number of years after Maria's visit to the Four Realms." I'm not sure, because I think the reason it confused me is because it says 1 year later, I think.
Could be a translation thing. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either, but yeah, hopefully it's an appropriate thing, although I think it's sort of just a fantasy, fairy tale.
Yeah.
Non-sexual sort of thing.
Yeah, of course. We said that on the show. Peter Larson writes, "I also like Chris's horrified, she is the consumer of candy. Like she was a mountain walking or stumbling, or perhaps Galactus appearing above the Baxter building."
I thought a bit more about the compass your thing. If it means confectioner.
Yeah.
I mean, that element, they are calling out cosmic horror, as I said they were on the show, but it's really referring to a specific person, an actual candy maker who created most of the universe they live in, I think. Mm-hmm. Even though they're using the French word for it, we were attaching too much significance to it. It really means a confectioner. And it's sort of like when C-3PO says, "Thank the maker." You know, he's talking about somebody who built the robots. And I think that they're very similar in that respect.
Yeah,
Kira Walters writes, "I was convinced to look up a few things in the original version after finishing these episodes. A few things stand out. First, the scene in which Drosselmeyer first acts like a robot seems like it was translated pretty faithfully. It doesn't make any more sense in the original. Second, and this is along the lines of what I was just saying, in German, the word confiseur is not used, simply the German word for confectioner. Why change it to French? No idea." So again, this is Mrs. St. Simon. Lastly, Drosselmeyer's repeated stupid pack is the word schnack in the original text. Schnack means something like gossip or to talk in a vulgar manner. There's some nuance lost with my translation, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
So I think that's what's going on. Merry Christmas for Havai Nocton to everyone who reads this comment.
Thank you, Kira. Now, Stuart Hutzman writes, "In his rush to interpret child murder, I think Chris missed perhaps the most likely explanation, merely plying a child with copious amounts of drugs and alcohol."
Again,
Laudanum, which was a mixture of alcohol and opium, was commonly used as a painkiller, including for children and infants. And Maria, having cut her arm quite badly, would possibly be doped up on it. So poor Marie might have been drugged to the gills and having all sorts of weird opium-induced fever dreams while 19th century physicians lean over and say, "I say, have we tried giving her more drugs?" Perhaps related to the weird, it was apparently Samuel Taylor Coleridge's opium withdrawal nightmares that produced some of the most striking imagery in his weird, fascinating poems.
Shoggoth Lord writes, "While there is certainly a superficial similarity between this Candyland and the one in Adventure Time, it rather ends there. After all, Adventure Time's setting only exists because it's a distant post-apocalyptic future after the Earth was nuked into oblivion during the Cold War." Wow, that's right, I forget.
Yeah, it's got kind of a real dark background.
It does.
Adventure Time. Heather Savino writes, thanks for making this holiday season even better with your awesome coverage of this crazy story. I've long thought more people should appreciate its weirdness. Love the music and Andrew's reading, as well as your alternative takes on the ending. Happy holidays. Thank you so much. That's so kind of you.
Happy holidays retroactively to you as well. Zane Graves writes, maybe around 20 years ago, I went down to New York City because a friend got tickets for the Nutcracker. I had zero expectations going in, but was thrilled at the dark vibe of Act 1. The whiplash from the second act left me very, very confused. And at the start of you guys covering the story, I would have bet cash money that none of the second act was even a thing. Me too.
Oh, yeah.
The existence of this tale absolutely confounds me. Thank you for guiding us through it. Well, I'm glad that people received this so well, because it definitely could have gone wrong. I mean, there's things like Dr. Satan where it's a sure bet. You know, the Nutcracker was a little bit of a dice roll.
It was. And that gets us into our comment show. Can you say...
Nucklevy.
Oh, Chad, no, you're not supposed to say it. Shargoth Lord writes,
whatever.
Chad, I hope you're not too upset. Tricking people into dubious interactions with the supernatural is just a friendly ribbing in my circle.
There's so many things in life we're afraid to say out loud. And then when you do, you realize it's not all that scary.
Yeah.
Nucklevy.
Oh, God.
Steve writes, when I was talking to Jeremy Dyson, you're going to be telling me you were talking to Chris Sarandon, too. You had mentioned that you were still talking to Jeremy, which you guys are chatting now that he did the show. You're friendly,
yeah,
right?
He's I would say he's my friend. We get coffee every few weeks. So I don't know. That's a friend. He's my friend. I'm going to say it.
Yeah. That's the weird thing, is if somebody that you're friends with is somewhat well known, then talking about them, you feel weird about it because it sounds like you're name dropping. You know, Patton Oswalt did that to us a few times. He goes, I don't mean to name drop, but... See how I did a name drop within a name drop? Yeah, but he really did. He seemed like he felt guilty. But the thing is that all the people he knows are famous. So what else can you do?
And it was pertinent to the fact that it was Jeremy Dyson, because we were talking about Aikman. So, you know, I wanted to bring it back, bring everybody. You know, I'm getting this information from a reliable source. But check it out. I was actually getting it from Greg Johnson, because I screwed up. Jeremy didn't tell me that story. Greg Johnson told me that story.
Whoa, really?
Greg was the one that told me that, and I got confused who told me that story, because I'm addled in my decrepitude. So, Greg, I'm sorry. You are the one that told me that story.
There is this thing that Heather does that is so funny. I'm going to get this out to our entire audience so I can cut off ahead of time being busted on this, because there was one time early in our relationship with Heather and I told her a story about seeing Christina Ricci at a party.
Uh-huh.
Now, this had not happened to me. It happened to a friend of mine, PJ Byrne.
Oh.
He had seen Christina Ricci at a party, and he said something about her. And I repeated it, but it was too many steps for me to explain who this guy was and why he was at the party and stuff. And I had only been dating Heather for a short amount of time, so I just went ahead and said it was me. I'm not making an excuse for it. You shouldn't do that. But hopefully most people can understand. Sometimes you make somebody else's story. Your story is almost a shorthand. I did that. Then she was over at our apartment when I lived with you, and she goes, oh, it was sort of like when you saw Christina Ricci at that party, and you go, what are you talking about? Because you knew that had never happened. So you busted me.
I'm sorry.
No, you were right to do so, but I got that look on my face that one gets when you're caught in some kind of lie, and yes. I was like, Anyway, man, Heather busts that story out of nowhere all the time when we're hanging out with people. She'll go, oh, you want to know what Chad did? I mean, this is 20 years ago. It's pretty funny, though, but I still feel a little panicked. Like, are they going to think all my stories are bullshit now? I'm rigorously honest about it now, guys. I learned my lesson.
Sometimes you got to learn those lessons, and I guess Heather's just reminding you.
By the way, PJ Byrne is somewhat famous, too, so I did a name drop in there.
Wow. God, he's
slipped
so good.
It by. Zing.
He's so good at that. Elisheba writes, you think people needed to rescue Persephone? What are you waiting for? She's in the underworld, checks the calendar, right now. Be the change you wish to see. Lead by example. Stop waiting on other people who ought to do something.
Yeah, you're right. I'm going, somebody should go down and rescue her. Why am I not doing it?
I know. It's true. James Cundart writes, P.S. I think Chris meant octopuses have eyes that evolved in parallel with vertebrate eyes, even though they have no backbone. The cephalopods, not a lackey. I do have a backbone. The compound eye is found in insects, of course. I said that wrong. And obviously is considerably different. Yeah, I made a mistake. I apologize.
Another correction, I think, is here. Steve writes, what is it with centaurs? Do all Americans say it that way? To which Alan Ricks writes, yes. and says, we watched Hercules, The Legendary Journeys. So I guess that's what he's basing it off of. George Orr Banks writes, this American says centaur. I watched The Legendary Hercules growing up. His sidekick was Newton the Centaur. Centaur, yeah. What? How would you, when he's saying, do all Americans say it centaur, is it centaur we're supposed to be saying?
Do people say minotaur instead of minotaur? I always said minotaur.
I don't know. Or is it centaur?
Again, it's regional dialects.
Centaur. You say centaur, I say centaur. It's a weird creature either way, as the old song goes.
Yeah, classic.
Rafe writes, we were talking about John Barrowman in Shark Attack 3 having this really wild line, which he says, hey, why don't you go in the house and I'll give you cunnilingus, is basically a paraphrase of what it is. It's very surprising when it happens in the movie. And a bunch of people wrote back about that. Rafe wrote, Barrowman was as surprised as the Shark Attack 3 viewers when that line was included. This is so interesting. Apparently, the actress in that scene was somewhat wooden. Confirmed, by the way. I don't remember much about that movie, but I remember that she was, it seemed like, you know, she didn't know where she was. So Barrowman went off script with that line to shock her and get some kind of reaction, thinking that they'd cut her reaction with his side of one of the other takes with the proper line. And instead, they kept the whole thing in. I could totally see that happening.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, that's amazing. It's the one thing about that movie we're still talking about.
Yeah, I know. I don't remember anything.
Of course you would keep it in. Yeah, it's great. And that concludes our coverage of comments from the final month of 2021.
Yep. Goodbye, 2021. We're swinging into the new year pretty hot with these pulp stories. We're going to be back with more of those. For now, that's all we got. I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Lackey, and you've been listening to The Comment Show of Strange Studies and Strange Stories.
Exclusively on Patreon.
HPPodcraft.com.